Hi there, Jan. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well, thank you. So taking a look around, I see Stir Kinnicore is getting strict on some of their movie trailers at the snack counters.
Yeah, this was an interesting story for a couple of reasons. So what seems to be happening is, well, firstly, there was a complaint with the Advertising Standards Authority that Stir Kinnicore was showing trailers that were not age-appropriate in a public place. So in other words, you're standing at the snack counter and suddenly there's a trailer rated 13 for violence being shown, and you've got your child there to watch the latest Pixar Disney movie. And so that's in essence what the complaint was about. And so Stir Kinnicore actually responded and said, now, you know, hang on a second, just because the movie is rated 16 or 13 or whatever, that doesn't mean the trailer has the same rating. The trailers can be rated for an audience of 10 or younger, even though the trailer, or even though the movie itself, is for older audiences. So that was actually interesting to find out that the trailer can have a different rating from the actual movie. But the ASA told Stir Kinnicore that regardless, it needs to make sure that any trailers it screens in a public place, now in the theater, different story. So if you're busy watching a movie that's rated 16, then, you know, if you screen trailers for that are rated 16, then no problem. But in a public place, Stir Kinnicore needs to make sure that its trailers are, that the trailers it screens are suitable for children at all times. So that means that it can't screen trailers that are even rated 13 in a public place. It's going to need to tone down the
okay, so even if there's no actual violence in the trailers, the fact that it's for a movie, for older viewers, they can't show that.
Exactly. In a public place, at the snack counter.
Okay, so at what point does the mommy state take it too far?
that's a good question. And now that said, I've never been a parent, and I can completely sympathize that there are parents out there that are very, very careful about what they expose their children to. And I guess that includes the kind of aestheticized violence that we get out of Hollywood. So, you know, the latest Jumanji trailer or whatever, some parents just don't want their children to see that. And I guess they're well within their rights to complain and expect the relevant authorities to you know, step in and say, there are rules, and the rules are you are not allowed to expose a child to content that is rated too high for them. So those are the rules, and Stir Kinnicore has to abide by those rules.
Okay, now, I can understand part of it, but, you know, once again, I'm also not a parent. But, you know, one of the things that I would say, which is would be a possible reasonable compromise, is if you have certain times when those age-restricted trailers could be shown and certain times when they couldn't.
Yeah, fair point. And the ASA does mention that. So it said that Stir Kinnicore, I think the exact wording of the ruling was something to the effect of, the wording of the ruling was something to the effect of Stir Kinnicore must make sure that inappropriate trailers are not screened during times where it is expected that children will be at the theater. So in other words, after 8 o'clock, a typical watershed period, as it's known in the broadcasting industry, no problem. But if you're there in the middle of the day to watch the newest cartoon with your child, then violence in the trailer, no go.
Fair enough. Okay, this next story has really touched me, because I have to say, about a few weeks ago, we spoke about the amount of data that Netflix actually uses on a phone. And after we had that discussion on this air, I have to admit, I went and downloaded Netflix. And now we're talking about the difference, the different data usage between mobile versus Wi-Fi when using Netflix.
Yeah, so the tests that one of the journalists of my broadband conducted there, Jamie, he found, and it's not that unexpected, I guess, but you know, sort of worth stating, that there is a difference between the amount of data used when you're watching Netflix on Wi-Fi as opposed to over a mobile connection. And the reason for that is that on a Wi-Fi connection, which might be faster, I mean, it depends on the characteristics of the connection, but on a Wi-Fi connection where the latency is more stable and where the throughput is higher, you would actually get a higher quality stream. And on top of that, Netflix has told us that in actual fact, they optimize the streams that are served over mobile even more to use a little bit less data. Now, in this case, we didn't let the test hold back, and so the difference between mobile and Wi-Fi is actually marginal, but it's there and it's noticeable. So to give you an idea, a single episode, a 40-minute episode of a show on mobile would take up about 148 megabytes. So we were testing a show called The Expanse. That was a 45-minute episode. On Wi-Fi, that same show is 204 megabytes.
Mm-hmm.
The second episode, 43 minutes long, was 153 megs on mobile. And on Wi-Fi, it clocked in at 177 megs. So we're not talking huge sums of data, but certainly something to keep in mind, especially if what you're doing is putting a SIM into a router and streaming Netflix that way. Netflix will probably see that as a non-mobile connection. It'll see that as a Wi-Fi connection and use the high fidelity stream and end up costing you more data than if you stream it just directly from the SIM in the phone.
Okay, and now I'm assuming that these tests have been done specifically for streaming. There hasn't been a comparison between the streaming and downloading.
No, that's still coming. But yeah, it's a good question, and it'll be interesting to see where that comes in. I'd expect the download size to come in at about the same as a Wi-Fi stream, on a fast connection. I need to caveat that. So in other words, if you're capable of streaming full 1080p, then I suspect that the downloads will come in at about that size as well. So it's a great way to actually get 1080p, watch 1080p content without streaming it directly. So if you're on a slightly slower connection, and you can't actually, you know, stream 1080p because your connection is too slow, you might actually be able to download it at least and watch it that way. But that means that the downloading will be slightly larger than on a connection that's capable of sustaining a 720p stream.
Ah, fantastic. And taking advantage of Howard not being in the studio, as we get to talk a little bit cryptocurrency, and apparently miners are burning Bitcoin cash to drive up value.
This was an interesting story. It came from Bloomberg across the wire, and the guys behind the one mining pool, Ant Pool, has actually been there's a lot of controversy around this. And so what's happening is you've got two camps in the Bitcoin world. There's more than two camps, but two big warring factions in Bitcoin right now. And the one is saying that no, Bitcoin Cash is Bitcoin as it was envisioned by the original creator, Satoshi Nakamoto. And whereas the Bitcoin guys are going, no, don't be silly. You know, he could never have foreseen things as they turned out the way they did. And so now what's happening is to drive up the value of Bitcoin Cash, which, just to remind the listeners, but you had Bitcoin, the original, the one and only. And then last year, there was a huge schism in the community, a big argument about certain changes being made to Bitcoin. And this resulted in what they call in the industry a fork. So basically, Bitcoin Cash is an exact copy of Bitcoin and all the transactions that happened on the Bitcoin network up to a certain date, but with then at that certain date, the rules governing the two systems diverge. So Bitcoin Cash runs on a slightly different set of rules to Bitcoin. And the accusation is that a big mining pool called Ant Pool is artificially trying to drive up the value of Bitcoin Cash by creating scarcity by doing what they call burning the Bitcoin Cash. So literally what they do is they said that they are going to take 12% of all Bitcoin Cash they have mined and burn it. In other words, send it to a place where no one can ever recover it.
Okay, and I take it, seeing as this is an unregulated currency, that those little things like price fixing and all of that doesn't really apply to them?
Exactly. And so there's nothing stopping them from doing this. And certainly it should get people's attention to see, you know, what if someone has a significant sort of market power over a certain coin, what they are able to achieve with that coin. Now, fortunately, Antpool doesn't control like a majority of Bitcoin Cash, but they control, you know, enough of the mining resources in Bitcoin Cash to have a fairly big say in this. So the criticism here, sorry to interrupt myself there for a second, the criticism here is that they are basically doing this, that this whole thing is a PR stunt, that it's not actually that it doesn't really affect the value of Bitcoin Cash in any real way, and that they are only doing this to be able to say, oh look, Bitcoin Cash is now scarcer than it was before and therefore worth more. And so in so doing, all the Bitcoin Cash that they've been hoarding then becomes higher in value. That's the criticism here, is that effectively these guys are trying to manipulate sentiment to try and hike the value so that they can sell the Bitcoin Cash they're sitting on at a higher value.
You know, I could sit and talk about this all day. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. So looking forward to catching up with you next week when we'll be talking to you on Thursday and in studio.
Great. Catch you then.
Thank you so much, Jan. Goodbye.
Keep well. Bye.